This is a production of Cornell University.
I would like to call the meeting order now. And let's start with voting member roll call as usual. Kristen?
Here.
Jesse?
Here.
Rebecca?
Here.
Tyler?
Here.
Elena?
Here.
Cassandra?
Here.
Ariana?
Here.
Sarah?
Absent.
Alex?
Here.
Zenda?
Here.
Rachel?
Here.
Jonathan? Cheyenne?
Absent.
Margaret? Carlos? Dan?
Here.
Wendy? Vanessa?
Here.
So, all other field representatives, please come to the front after the meeting to sign up if you haven't done so. So the next item on the agenda is approval of the minutes from our meeting on September 25th.
Motion to approve the minutes.
And in dissent to approving the minutes from September 25th. Seeing none, the minutes passes. And now let's move on to the next thing on our agenda, which is presentations. And we have first Gina from the Office of the Assembly.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you very much for giving me this time. At this point in the semester, most of you probably well know what the assemblies are and the function of the office. But because we have a brand new website that may be new to some of you, and it's always good for me to sort of dust off where we are with this. I'm just going to go through a few slides that sort of give us a history of how you all got to be where you are actually sitting today, and then we'll go into a few things on the website and I'll answer any questions you may have. So briefly, the history of shared governance. The Board of Trustees in 1955, prior to then, faculty had been able, they made all of the decisions regarding not just academic policy, but non-academic as well. And it wasn't until 1955 when the president, the Board of Trustees delegated that then to the president of the university. As you probably well know too, that the assemblies had their roots in the events of 1969, and it was in 1970 when there was over 7,000 people camped out in Barton Hall for 3 days to really try to affect the event, not just address the effects, the events that were happening, but how to really create a more a campus community that had some say in the policies. And so out of the events of 1969 came the assemblies, we call them the modern assemblies, the Office of the Ombudsman, and the Campus Code of Conduct, and what it's as it's sort of in its modern iteration. There were major overhauls to the governance bodies in 1977 and 81, and the GPSA was created in 1993. Prior to that, it had all been sort of one student assembly, and the graduate students actually mobilized and made the case for you have a unique perspective, you have unique needs as graduate professional students here at Cornell, thus the GPSA. So everybody at Cornell has representation in shared governance. We call shared governance, it's very loosely, it's the assemblies, the faculty senate, and the constituent elected trustees. Cornell is pretty, it's almost unique in that it allows the body, the constituent bodies, to elect full voting members to the Board of Trustees. Sarah, I know, is usually here, that's a unique voice to carry your messages and make sure that your interests are represented to the board. And the staff and the faculty also have representation there. So the employee assembly, the grad professional student assembly, the student assembly, the faculty senate, and another, not entirely unique, but there isn't really any other iteration like it. The university assembly at Cornell takes up interests that relate to the whole campus community. So appointed members by the constituent assemblies sit on the university assembly, and that also includes the faculty senate. The administrative structure, the delegated authority for all of the assemblies comes from the board of trustees, delegated through the president. So as you can see, each of the assemblies and the faculty senate have an administrative lead. Yours is Ryan Lombardi, and then Dean New also. And what do? Well, we like articles, so we're the office of the assemblies. I just need to see if I've written this really cool little note to myself. But in addition to supporting the work that you all do, making sure that you have food and you have rooms and placards, we make a lot of placards. We work very closely to make sure that the community knows about shared governance and representation. So we work very closely with the registrar and HRIS to make sure that we have current data representing here. So all of you, when we send out the mailings for different elections or for newsletters, that you get all of the information because we know that you're part of this constituent group. And we do that for all 32,766 members of the community, whether it's faculty, staff, undergrads, or grad and professional students. And also the differentiating you by field and by grad and professional students, so that again, if there are anything particular related to you in your experience here at Cornell, we facilitate that by virtue of these data sets. We manage a lot of data. In addition to all of the particular things you can read off here, and this is really more of the tasky kind of support, we did build this really, really cool website that hopefully will allow you all to give you some tools to allow you to do your jobs better, more easily, have access to information. And since we're still in the very much a shakedown part of this, I really have appreciated the input and response to some of the things that we have, and look forward to a lot more of that kind of communication. It helps us make sure that you've got what you need to do your jobs. So I'm just going to do a really brief little tour here. We designed this not just to have tools for you and your committee members or your committee chairs, but to be engaging as well. Again, if there's we know it to be true that most folks on campus don't quite know what the assemblies are, this would be a portal for folks to find their place. So the landing page really identifies you as, where do you fit in the community? You can find your information here, how to get involved, the guidance professional students. You're already here, so you don't need to know this, but share it with your constituents. It's important to remember that you all represent people. The folks who are elected as voting members, you were elected, you're here either appointed as field reps or however you're here. Be the voice for your constituents. And that's a very important thing. It's oftentimes it's easy to think of this as a closed group. It's open. A big part of what we do is maintain the public record. We're the exchequer of the processes, and we really try hard to make sure things are transparent and very fair. So people that are in the room on this website right now. There's some other tools. Again, if you're part of your obligations are tracking resolutions or finding out when the meetings are, committees and listservs, we maintain all of those. So we've tried to give the handoff the tool for adding or staffing committees to the committee chairs. It's a little cumbersome. You might say it's very cumbersome, and we're happy to help with that. But really, we want to empower you all to be able to manage who's on your committee, the work that you do, send it, you know, we see it so we can make sure it gets to the right spot on the website. And so I'm going to show you some of the really great functionality. So if you just pick, all of this is searchable, but if you just pick, let's see. So here's the resolution. It'll have the legislative history. It'll have, down here, it'll have the meetings where it was discussed. You can go to these meetings and find it in the minutes. So anything you need to track, whether it's for, you want to write a resolution, you want to see what, how to do it, that's there as well. We have tools and resources. Again, more about the history of shared governance. If you or your constituents ever need to know quite how to move on a topic, and actually I feel like I'm speaking to the choir because the GPSA is really, really good about doing that. But we created this just one pager, get our attention. Put in there just a little blurb about what you're trying to do, and we can make sure that the proper, through the executive committee, gets to the right committee. So, this. If you have any questions and feedback, particularly feedback about the website, it'd be really, really helpful. Anybody who spends money on behalf of the assembly or committees, I just want to really reiterate that there are three payment methods, and we hope that that you work through our office so we can make, in most cases, we can pay for things directly for the assembly and its committees. It's so much easier than going through the reimbursement route, which sometimes takes a long time. So if you ever have to spend money on the assembly, please either be in touch with someone on the exec, Tyler, or myself, reach out to the office, stop by, and we can make sure that we can facilitate that for you. It's important that we have enough lead time. The more lead time we have, everybody's happy, but if you can do that, I think you'd be better served than trying to spend money out of pocket. That's it. I appreciate your involvement. This was and if you have any questions, I'm happy to entertain them. Or, again, stop by the office or send a note. assembly@cornell.edu is a group mailbox. Myself, actually Matt in this case, sometimes sees it too. And Pam, who you've been as well.
Could you briefly go over the questions, please?
Sure. So you can either pay for something directly, in which case you get reimbursed. Sometimes there's an account at a particular vendor. If it's a local vendor, we can also, because we have that account, you can just communicate with us where you're trying to charge to, and we can set that up. Or we pay it directly. Just be in touch and say, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to order this for this event. And as long as it goes through your own internal approval process, we'll make those payment arrangements directly. Anything else?
Any other questions?
What's the easiest way to apply for a committee through the website?
Seriously?
Oh, for the benefit of those of us.
Sure. Okay, let me get to it. So, go to the committees, and let's see. Which committee would you like to apply to? We'll apply to one that we think is open.
Sure.
How about the student advocacy?
Sure.
It'll say actually over here on the let's go back. It's over here on the right. It'll tell you if it's accepting applications. So this, in fact, you could just click on that, and it would take you directly to the applications page. Or this is actually all Kerberos authenticated by your NetID. And because I'm trying to get into the GPSA, it won't allow you, by virtue of your status at the university, to do things that you're not allowed to do. So I can do this just because I have sort of a global permissions. But in this case, you would fill out your name here. It's already pre-populated. There are a few things that the GPSA exec has asked for from its committee applicants. And you have an opportunity here to upload those or write. Briefly explain your previous campus involvements and why are you interested in serving on this committee. So there's just little brief things. You can add a resume if you'd like, no longer required. That's a request. And once you submit this, you'll fill it all out, hit submit. and it goes directly to the person on the executive committee in charge of staffing committees. In this case, it would be Alex. Work the other persons on the folks on the different assemblies. So those are the steps, and then on the back end, Alex and his counterparts have a whole different job of making sure that the committee chairs can view and approve, or at least pick, select the committee members.
Okay, thank you, Gina. Yep. So we have no time for any other questions,
okay.
But you can directly email Gina if you have any pressing questions. Thank you, Gina.
Thank you very much.
And next, we have Tyler.
Nothing personal. Make sure I look what? Someone just say, make sure I look really sassy. Talk really fast. So how can I make, I'm looking for the, for my allergy. No, I'm looking for the box that just disappeared. It's fine. Hello. What's up? Really fast. Oh, no, I will talk to somebody. Great, okay, I think I have it, folks. My name is Tyler, making sure this works. Yes, it does, great. Okay, everyone, my name is Tyler. I'm the appropriations chair for the GPSA for the year 2017. And today I'm going to be presenting on the initial recommendations developed by the appropriations committee for the 2018-2020 GPSAF student activity. So due to the nature of the assembly, we're not going to be able to really get as in-depth as some of you probably want to with some of this stuff. But the good news is that appropriations members have made time from their schedule to be available every day this week to talk to people. You can ask questions about the process. You can ask questions about the committee makeup. You can ask questions about the organizations that are applying. And our justifications for the recommendations that we're about to describe. So you don't have to write this down right now because this will be also my last slide, and I'll just leave it up while we talk. But I highly encourage anyone who knows that they're gonna have questions or anyone who thinks they might have questions to come to these times and talk with our members. Okay, so I think I've shared this slide before or something like it. Again, this is sort of giving a foundation of where we are. So all of us in this room, or most of us in this room, are graduate professional students. And so we contribute to the student activity fee, which goes to fund bilingual funded organizations, which are performing and providing services and benefits of value to the graduate and professional community. So this right here changes once every 2 years. It's reevaluated. And the Appropriations Committee has a whole process of reviewing applications, deciding what are on those applications, having a public hearing process, which we've already had, and then sort of understanding a little bit more about these organizations. So when I walked into my role last January, this is kind of, from my perspective, how I saw things. So in terms of the relationship of the Appropriations Committee, or GPSA, to the other bilateral organizations, once every 2 years, we'd get up on our ladder with our sort of obligations in hand and yell down at the byline organizations of things that they need to do, should have done, basically justifying why we should continue supporting them. So it doesn't exactly lead to sort of a positive open space that you can actually use for collaboration. But what we've been trying to do in the past year is to make this more of a collaborative process where we're actually talking throughout the 2 year cycle so that we don't have any last minute hiccups or just general confusion about how to reach certain obligations we have with these groups that we fund. Okay, so the format that my slides are going to take, and I apologize in advance, this isn't going to be the most interesting presentation I'll ever give, but it is going to be as succinct as I can possibly make it. So the way that this will be set up is each slide is going to have the title of the group that applied for funding, and then it'll have this first line here, which is how much money they're requesting per student. This is, when we think about student, we're thinking about the number of enrolled graduate and professional students, which of course is going to change year after year because enrollment numbers change. The number after this is going to be, in some cases, what a lump sum is. So some of these organizations actually gave us what they thought the number of enrolled students was. In many cases, this number was wrong. But that's okay. That just means that we adjusted some numbers. Because then this third line here is going to be the recommendation that the AC is presenting to the GPSA, which is going to give the amount per student. But then after we actually take into account how many students are actually enrolled, what the lump sum is. Does anyone have any questions about that before I move forward? No, great, okay. Then let's get right into it. So there are 12 different organizations. For those of you who are feeling the sort of the nod off happening, this is your little progress indicator as we get closer to 12. So these are in order, just alphabetical order. So starting with athletics and physical education, this group is what it sounds like. So they're managing all the intercollegiate athletics, sports games, the physical education classes, outdoor recreation, and the fitness center. And so they currently provide us two specific benefits for funding them. One is the Big Red Sports Pass, which gets all graduate and professional students who opt into it free access to most sports games, in addition to their family members. And then also they block off a set of discounted season tickets for hockey. So they requested $8.03. We did the calculations. This is one of the cases where they sort of lowballed the number of students. So they were asking for this amount of $56,000, and we wanted to go ahead and recommend that full amount. The things that we think merit a full funding of this lump sum is that they have hired a new supervisor who's in charge of the ticketing process. That's where most of our concerns lie on the committee. So we think that there's a lot of structural improvements going on, and we want to support that. Next up is the Big Red Barn. This is also a group that I think most people in this room are probably aware of. So they're operating the Big Red Barn Student Center, and they host numerous graduate professional student groups, department groups, undergraduate groups, off-campus groups. They do things like TGIF in addition to numerous other events. So they've requested $15 per student, but when we had our public hearing with Chris Korda, who's the director of the Big Red Barn, she actually is meeting this number, 84,210. And the reason for this is for two major reasons. The first is that less people are buying beer. So they're having less revenue and they don't want to raise the price. But also they have an entire staff of graduate and professional students that run all of their operations. And New York State signed legislation which is mandating that everyone's minimum wage be up to $15. So this is a gradual phase-in process, and Chris, the director, is wanting to get ahead of this. Also, Chris Korda is going to be retiring in 2019, and so we fully expect there to be some hiccups and unexpected expenses during the transition process. So we think that this amount should cover everything that they need. And just more generally, most of us on the committee agree that the Big Red Barn is one of the cultural institutions for our community, and they really provide just a really wonderful service to the graduate and professional students. All right, next up is Cornell Cinema. So Cornell Cinema operates the cinema in Willard Straight Hall. They have film series, educational film series, and they also have events in Sage Chapel and Bailey Hall. So they went ahead and requested $11, and the recommendation of the AC is to go ahead and recommend the full $11 for Cornell Cinema. I want to take a minute to talk about Cornell Cinema. So historically, this has been one of the more contentious groups that we fund, and depending on who you ask, you'll get different reasons for why that is. What we try to focus on in this funding process is sort of the good things and the progress which have been made in the past 2 years. So out of all the organizations, Cornell Cinema was one of the best in terms of the amount of follow-up and timely responses that they gave to us. They also fulfilled all of their obligations that we requested of them. Of particular note was an attendance tracking system, which we asked for some time for them to implement. So they have that data, they were able to show it to us, they can like, share it with the assembly as well. And what's interesting, maybe this isn't a surprise to some of you, but the grouping of people who are attending Cornell Cinema from the graduate professional student population is rather diverse. So the stereotype of it only being for humanities students or no STEM students doesn't fly, but there's no evidence to support that. We also are aware that for some of these organizations, there's sort of an inherent property that is not easily quantified. So with an example of something like Cornell Cinema, much like the Big Red Barn, we think that this is a cultural institution and is providing sort of intangible value. And so this was also going into our consideration here. And then of course, funding doesn't occur in a vacuum. So we know that in the student assembly, they're having conversations just as we are about how much to fund them. And we know that there will be at minimum about a 20% decrease in how much the SA is providing them. So we consider this, but we stand by the fact that this number on our committee is sort of an expression of what we think is of value to our community. So for anyone who's sort of maybe been part of past cycles or has been part of the conversation and heard stories about this, you might be concerned and say, well, why are we raising the allocation per student for Cornell Cinema? So this is about 46 cents more per student than last cycle. And so Mary, who's the director of Cornell Cinema, in the public hearing that we held, said outright that she wants to move away from the student activity fee as a funding model. And so as the AC, and I believe as the GPSA, we are in agreement on that for maybe different reasons, maybe similar reasons. And the main reasons that Mary gave to us is that this is a really volatile, very stressful, and very time-intensive way to continue receiving funding. So they're currently pursuing alternative funding strategies, and we've started communicating with them to develop some sort of joint strategy to gradually and sustainably draw down how much we're providing them after this funding cycle, while also helping support them in their actions to diversify. Cornell Concert Commission. So this is the group that hosts musical events and performances. They went ahead and requested $576. We are recommending the full $576. This is how much the group requested last year. We think that they're really well managed. Their application materials were great. And we think that they have sort of a strong advertising presence to graduate professional students, which isn't easily said for a lot of other groups that we reviewed. That's all I have to say about that. So Cornell University EMS, this group is also pretty straightforward. So they are providing the emergency medical services to campus events, and also they provide training workshops, things like CPR, to anyone in the Cornell community. So they previously have requested $1.80, they're still requesting $1.80. We think this would be an absurd thing to not fund fully. So we highly recommend funding $1.80 as they request. So Cornell University Programming Board. So this is the group that organizes lectures and non-musical acts. So they went ahead and requested $4.05. We, however, on appropriations are recommending $2.46, which is a decrease from the last cycle. And there are two big reasons for this. The first is that we had a tremendously, I should use that word. We had a big problem with trying to actually communicate with this student group during the funding process. So when I was doing some preliminary reach outs last May, this group was exceptionally hard to get any response back from whatsoever. We scheduled public hearings, gave them advance notice, and they missed their public hearing. So members of the AC had to have a makeup hearing just for them. They also weren't able to provide us answers to follow-up questions, and then they couldn't, or they didn't provide us any attendance data, which they said they would be able to do. So that's all one reason. That's bracketed as one reason. The second reason is that from their application materials, it appears that the way that they typically go about with co-sponsoring with student groups to have events on campus is they let people come to them. So it seems like very much a passive process. And so we hope that by sort of decreasing the amount of money that we're giving to them, this sort of emphasizes the fact that we want them to be a little more active in letting people know that this is a source of funding for groups on campus. All right, so the GPSA is us. We went ahead and requested $4.90 per student. This is an increase from last year. The request as a lump sum is really this number, 36,100. And if any astute observers in the audience, you'll notice that this is the same amount in the resolution 3 that I'll be talking about later tonight. So this increase is based on two ideas. The first is that we want to increase the funding going to match our internal committees. So particular note, we've given a fairly large increase to DISC, the Diversity International Students Committee. But there are other committees that have also sort of been beefed up in terms of their funding to try and increase the outreach of the group as a whole. So that's one aspect of the increase. And the other aspect of the increase is something we've talked about before, which is Annabelle's Bursary. And so Annabelle's Bursary, to those of you who are unfamiliar or forget, is a student-run grocery store on campus that's trying to address food insecurity by having discounted food for students. So it's only open to students. And last funding cycle, we agreed to start taking money out of through the GPSA in order to provide them $20,000 a year for 4 years. The original funding model for that was such that we wanted to take most of the money that we give them each year out of the student activity fee, but then some of it would come out of our rollover. But our rollover is getting pretty low, so we want to make sure that we have enough money to actually fulfill the agreement that we've made with Annabelle's. So this is the Graduate Professional Student Programming Board. This is an organization, Cheyenne is the president, who sadly is not here, but they host and co-sponsor events for specifically our population of graduate professional students throughout the year. They're particularly known for GradBall, but they do a lot of other great work. So they've requested $3 per student. We are recommending $2.22. And the main reason for this difference, this is the same amount they were receiving last cycle. The main reason for this is that we couldn't tell from our conversations with them or anything in their application that would suggest an actual need for increased funding. So because of that, we think sort of supporting them at the same level is good, but I do want to mention that we had generally positive conversations with Cheyenne, who's the new president. She just stepped into this role, and we like sort of where some of her ideas about where she wants to be. Okay, so International Students Union, or ISU. So this is a group that hosts, co-sponsors, co-hosts numerous events on campus related to international culture, diversity. They also advocate for international students more generally. So they went ahead and requested $1.98 per student, and we on the AC have decided to recommend $1.46. So this is a slight decrease from how much they were getting last year. And so to take a moment to talk about this application particularly, all of us on the committee agreed that they do very good programming coming from within ISU. And that we were very happy to see that they expressed a commitment, both verbally in the public hearing and also written in their applications, to increase their advocacy work more generally for all students. However, there were concerns that we had generally about the application and about the kinds of responses we heard back in our public hearing. The first is that in our last funding cycle, we requested that they sort of de-emphasize their actions as a funding board and sort of re-emphasize the advocacy work for graduate professional students. There doesn't seem to be any past or future trends that would suggest that they're actually doing that. In the public hearing, they also expressed distinctly that they very much want to maintain their funding status to be able to fund other groups on campus. So that's something that we want to keep talking with them about. The second is that in terms of their leadership or just membership generally in ISU, there's extremely low graduate professional student participation, such that we can expect to see one or two graduate professional students in ISU as a whole, and there are roughly 80 members of ISU. That, in conjunction with the co-sponsorships that ISU has been doing, they co-sponsor a huge number of events. Out of all of these, which is I think several hundred, only four or five are graduate and professional student groups. one of these of which is actually our own DISC. So we think the general level of co-sponsorship there is quite low. And then finally, the organization doesn't collect any attendance data. They do rough headcounts currently. And they also don't collect feedback on the events that they do hold. So we have no way to verify that graduate professional students and their families are utilizing, being going to, or valuing the kind of work that ISU is actually putting forward. So with that said, we still wanted to support them, but we want this to be part of a serious conversation about helping them achieve what our shared goals are. Okay, so for orientation at the graduate school, so this is the event that all incoming graduate students at Cornell attend. They've requested $1 per student, and they were specifically requesting as a lump sum $4,992. We are recommending no funding, and this is for a few different reasons. So the first is that for the members of the AC and also for the representatives who spoke with us at the hearing, it's basically unheard of for graduate professional students to fund their own orientation events. It doesn't happen at any of our sister institutions. The second point is that in 2016, the graduate school delegated orientation for professional students to their respective professional schools. So previous to this, all graduate professional students would be coming together for this set of events of orientation in the fall or in the spring. Now, however, it's been separated out. At the hearing, when we were discussing consequences of perhaps lowering funding to orientation, it was suggested to us that the need is not necessarily money, but the need is more so having active feedback from graduate students in order to have the kinds of events that are the most valuable and are building inclusive community. And then finally, we asked about the relationship between GPSA and the grad school. And at that time, they told us that even if we decrease the funding going to orientation, this would not negatively impact the relationship between us and the grad school. So, rest assured. So we are recommending no funding, but this is also coming with the understanding that we want to still assist and be a part of orientation, but by providing people power. So students who are actually helping provide feedback to them so that we can have the best orientation events that we possibly can. Okay, and then we have risk management or club insurance. This is the organization that provides liability insurance. So if someone comes to your group event and they trip and hurt themselves, they can't sue you as an individual. So this is also one of those groups that is just a necessity. So they've requested $550. We're recommending $550. 12 out of 12, guys. All right, so that brings us to the last one, which is the GPSA Finance Commission. And this is a requirement that we have, which is we have to give at least 35% of the total student activity fee that we've recommended to the Finance Commission. So if you put all of these numbers together, we come to the grand total of $83.36, which for those of you in the audience who are thinking, okay, but what's the context of this? This is the context of this. So in 2008 to 2018, again, this is what we're proposing, it's not set. But we can see a general increase in this, which we should come to expect with inflation or more groups signing on, although in this period of time, we have no group sign-on, so it's the same number. But this is generally how it's going down. But if the GPSA were to today accept the recommendations in its current form, we would be paying $1 less than we are this cycle. Okay, so I want to leave you all with, again, this very critical message, which is that the Appropriations Committee and some of the members on exec that I've spoken with very much want to view the student activity fee as a collaborative process moving forward. And so if we think about the GPSA as an organization and then all of these byline organizations that we're funding, they have an overlap, this red area, and I think that red area is a goal, which is enriching the lives of graduate professional students and their families. So this is how we can collaborate. This is the same shared outcome that we're trying to achieve. So if we're able to actually work more interconnected with these folks, we can share resources more equitably, more efficiently, and achieve stronger outcomes for our community. But think about that is that we need people to do that, right? So the model mostly right now is just sort of a financial one, but what we want as appropriations is anyone who's interested in serving as a liaison between the GPSA and any of these funded groups to approach me. We're looking for any way that people have to non-financially support and collaborate with all of these groups. So please don't be shy. Please talk to me. And with that, that's all I have. So again, this is the schedule of times that we'll have members be available. It's rumored that we'll have coffee at these. Not a guarantee, just a rumor. And if you want to contact me more directly with questions, I'm not going to be at all of these. I'm just going to be at one. But if you want to contact me, the chair, it's TBM45. We also are going to just have a committee meeting on Friday, October 27th from 3:30 to 5. This is in MAN 102. You're also welcome. Those are always open, so you're welcome to attend. So with that, I think we have some time to have a conversation.
So is it possible to because I know the last time we had the appropriation review, we had the percent change in the previous budget. Could that be possible to
We could, yes, that absolutely can do. So I don't have percentages right now, but I do have this graphic to give a sense of what's changed. But if you're specifically asking for percent changes, sure. There's no reason why we can't do that. No, I don't care about that.
Is there a reason why the presence of campus EMS depends on student funding or funds being better?
That's a question that actually came up from our own committee members, and we didn't pursue that question, so we actually have no clue.
Well, I think it mostly has to deal with the fact that Cornell Police, you have to be like a police officer to be part of them, or Cornell EMS, you can be a graduate student or undergrad student, and you can be certified EMS and work in their squad, unlike police officers.
Yeah, sorry, I meant to say that. So that is run by Teja, and this is the organization which distributes money to all the other large organizations. And any, did you say, feel free to tell me again.
Any part, you don't have to be a big organization. Yeah.
Are these hours open to for non-teachers?
Yeah, so they're open. I mean, technically anyone, so like a faculty member could come in or an undergrad, but yeah, I mean, any certainly any graduate and professional student as well. Absolutely.
So you mentioned that the FAA would be providing a 20% decrease to Cornell Cinema. Is our number taking into account that decrease, like to compensate for a possible decrease, or was that not in the thought process of the AC when it made that suggestion?
So as I mentioned, we acknowledge what's going on in the essay, and again, this number that we provided was more a consideration of how we value what Cornell Center is doing and sort of what is merited after the work that they've put in based on what we've asked for them. So it's more consideration of that, but I think probably we were considering it. Yeah.
Yes. I was a little confused about
it's a great question. Yes, so the question was, there was a little confusion around Annabelle's grocery and why the funding for that is coming through the GPSA as opposed to just being a byline organization itself. So I wasn't around when this decision was made, but the basic premise was that the money that was being given to Annabelle's was intended to be startup money to sort of get them stable, and then they would continue moving forward. And the byline funding process doesn't always allow easy departure of groups from the byline system. Sort of once groups are on, a lot of groups would like to stay for obvious reasons. So that's more or less why that happened. But I'm I'll defer to the commission.
So another reason why we did it in that way is that we wanted to be able to choose or to allocate when they asked for, instead of just giving them a lump sum of $20,000, which actually became really useful last year when they actually weren't off the ground for all of the year. And so that money came in. So they come and ask us for money. And that way we're still just giving them that lump sum of $20,000. And that's actually a distinction that we made in a way that we fund animal groceries versus the way that the student assembly funds them. We could change that in the next cycle, but this is how we promise it for the 4 years. So the last two, and the next two, and so the next funding cycle, which Obama is around for, but next cycle, they will decide whether or not they want to keep doing this system for an active employment.
That's correct. So the way that the request for GPSFC worked was I said, Tasia, how much money do you need? And then it was sort of the 35% which were mandated you have to give, that hit the number. So that's how we went.
Can I talk really quickly to that as well, since Tasia's not here? That's one of the few things that some of these things that just go directly 100% right back to graduate professional students. Some can file on site or support not just grad students, but also undergrads and even staff and faculty. So I think that's one of the reasons, I'm sorry, I'm going wrong actually. I think that's one of the other reasons why we want to be able to give the FC that freedom.
So okay. Yeah, really ask why.
Yeah, so that's just like, yeah.
I think the ideas on the committee were one of trying to minimize this fee as much as we could while also making sure everyone has what they need. And so this was enough for Tasia.
Also, we routinely, before we changed the funding guidelines, had to overcommit because people were asking for money that they weren't using. And the change in funding guidelines was made so that people wouldn't do that, so that they would be requesting enough that they were actually using versus requesting higher, so we had to allocate higher. And then, okay, so when you were talking about decreases for ISU and Cornell University Program Board, you said some of it was to kind of change their focus in terms of programming. Will you talk to them to see if they even really care, or are they just going to be like, yeah, forget you, if you're not going to get money, we aren't going to even bother?
Right. We haven't had these conversations yet. So these numbers were made available to all the groups a few days after. So they've had it for, I think, a week longer than everyone in the assembly has had it to make comments. And so far, no groups have really asked about it. So as I've been on campus, sometimes I'll go to these groups and say, hey, you have any comments? But so far, no one has taken the opportunity to talk.
Questions, comments? Anthony?
Do we have some sort of written guidelines in terms of determining what are the sort of requirements that an organization must fulfill? It sounds like you have these requirements, but written in a way so that we can use them to address these organizations when they come to us for funding and say, these are the things that we want you to do so that you can get your funding or whatever.
That's a wonderful question. Thank you for asking it. Yeah, so in the spring semester, after the fee is set, appropriations committee comes together and then drafts a set of obligations of all of the different funded organizations, and that's what we use when we have conversations with them.
I could also add to that generally speaking, the guidelines for what the appropriations committee does with respect to the student aid fee is also laid out.
One last short question. I go to the AZ meetings, so it's not that I don't. So you're keeping GPSAP the same, but I know that last year they did have a little concern about funding for some of their events, including Grackle in particular. From your conversations with Cheyenne, is it now we're gonna be able to make it work this year, or is that still a concern in the future?
So I think, and any member of my committee who has a take on this can answer this question as well. My understanding of this was that it was brought up as if we had more money for grad ball, that would be good because then we could use a bigger venue and welcome more students. But it wasn't really stated as a need. it was sort of just as a comment. I'm getting a head shake from one of the committee members. So.
Did it also have something to do with not putting all their events towards, like all their money towards grad ball? Like they need to have other events.
They can only put like 50% to grad ball. So if you gave them more money, then they could use more money for grad ball.
And something to think about too with these numbers that have been presented is enrollment does change every year. The historical trend has always been up. So these numbers, so if we're giving $7.82, let's say if we're giving $7.64 to athletics, they're going to get probabilistically more money next year than they will be getting this year, just because enrollment is always increasing. So that's also something to consider.
Okay. So time's up. Thank you, Howard. Okay. The next item on the agenda is open forum. Yes.
I would like to make a comment. So I would like to propose that we add an additional GPSA meeting to our schedule. So currently we're slated to have, So currently we have October 30th, November 13th, and November 27th remaining. The reason why exec and AC are thinking that this might be beneficial is that we don't know exactly what's gonna happen when we start talking about these funding recommendations and voting on them. Historically, there's been a lot of conversation on that, and we're trying to make sure that we sort of have enough time and people are engaged in that time to actually discuss. So the time that I've spoken with Manisha about would be on November 6th. It's a Monday, be the same time. And these are some pros and cons that Manisha and I thought of. But this is more, this isn't me being like, we're doing it. This is a call to gain feedback.
Can I ask that? So that was sort of the things that when Tyler reached out to me about the agenda, it sounded like we would need 60 minutes of our next meeting to do these introductory votes, which would pretty much kill any other time on our agenda. So if we wanted to discuss anything, we have a lot of resolutions coming through. Our committees have lots of updates that they want to share. And we have speakers asking to talk to us. We would pretty much have to say no. I also want to bring up something the November 27th meeting, like that is also around the end of November, and if that's the last one, there might be decreased student attendance. So if we can kind of maybe try to keep things moving and get things done earlier, that might be better.
And one of the reasons why decreased attendance is also especially bad is because for the student activity fee resolution, which is when we pass one document with all of the numbers, we have to have 2/3 approval of it of our seated voting members. So whatever 2/3 of 18 is, like I don't do public math, that 12. So we need F 12, and obviously that's a conversation that we want a lot of people to be present for.
Yeah. So that's the other thing. You don't have to be seven like voting members, you gotta make sure you make that meeting. If you don't have that number, we're essentially, I think, don't we default to the previous year's recommendations?
Something bad.
It's really bad. So we can try to avoid that by powering through it in smaller chunks, rather than getting to the point where we're really frustrated because we've been talking to each other for like 75 minutes. That would probably be better.
Than that.
I don't know, just adding on from Nisha's thing, if people are going, oh no, it's another meeting, in my experience, the way that this pans out, if you don't add enough meetings to cover all these things, you're going to spend exactly the same amount of time.
Sorry, I'd like to take what's called a straw poll of the entire assembly. So for those of you who would be in favor of adding this additional meeting on November 6th, can you raise your hand or placard?
This is non-binding.
Yeah, this is non-binding. Oh, sorry, right. The reason it's a straw poll is because it doesn't count for anything. Seems like 25, 26. Okay, and then those who aren't in favor?
2, 3, 4, 5,
So it seems like there is support to do that.
So can I throw a suggestion out? This is also something we can try. I don't know how I feel about it either. Because we are adding this, we could not take attendance or field reps that meeting. Because I just recognize that people probably have already made commitments, and it's not like your fault that you made a commitment on a weekday, so a week that we had like scheduled an additional GK meeting. So I'm very open to not taking attendance. I just like really hope that people still come so that it's worth it. Like, it's not worth it, it's just the 19 like voting members. It really isn't.
We'll still have food.
But also because we want feedback on these numbers. 19 people should not decide like the only people talking into meeting numbers. So that would be my only thing if we decided not to take attendance. So just throw that out of the water.
So why not the training?
Why what?
Why not the training?
Yeah, that's the actual meeting.
Thanks for that.
That's the 27th. That's why we were nervous about the 27th. Yeah. People watching the talent.
No, weren't we trying to see if we can maybe get this voted on before the last meeting?
Yeah, so that,
I mean, that's in essence like what we're striving for.
And I think
and
so.
And this can help out that too. We're not like cramming.
Right. So we're getting a little into the weeds here, unfortunately. But yeah, my hope is that we would be able to vote on all the initial recommendations. Any that were rejected, the AC could then come up with a revised number, and then we vote on the final ones on November 13th. But I think, again, the GPSA is kind of like a black box, so we never know what level of discussion we're going to have on items. And so that's why I do think breaking this up, half of the bylines we vote on one day, half of the byline votes we vote on another day, really would help us.
Okay, so would you like to make a formal motion because we are running out of open forums?
I would love to make a formal motion. I motion to add an additional GPSA meeting to the fall schedule to be on November 6th, 2017 at the regular scheduled time.
And maybe the regular scheduled location we would have to change.
Okay, so there's been a second. So I would like to do a voting now. Does field reps get to vote?
I think it's voting members only, but we're gonna have a check. Okay, I'm not as close as I can
check.
Yeah.
Okay. So voting members, those in favor of adding this item. Okay.
Shouldn't there still be open time for discussion before we jump into a vote?
I thought that was going to be yeah. We were discussing.
Procedurally, I think that's actually,
yeah. When you make a motion to propose something, you don't just immediately put
it. Oh, I see. Okay.
Even if we already talked about it before.
Okay. So there's been a motion to add this extra meeting, and we are now in discussion. Yes.
You mentioned that you might have to roll call. This is not part of the motion, of course. We could just be added later or like that.
Okay, you can talk about attendance.
In the bylaws, it says that additional meetings may be scheduled at least one week in advance by the exec committee with written approval from at least 2/3 of voting members.
Okay. So we need supermajority to be able to add this, not the voting members.
And I would also like to point out that we could always reschedule that meeting, but right now the discussion is, are we adding the meeting?
One, yes.
Any other questions?
Second, okay. So that's been a, so right now we are going to vote on whether or not we want this, right? So those in favor of adding one extra meeting on November the 6th, 2017, please raise your flag. Voting members. Those opposed? Abstention? Okay. So with a vote of 13-0-5, we have added this extra meeting. Thank you. Okay. Okay, so time's up for open a forum. And now we have to move on to new business of the day. First, we have introduction to Resolution 6, calling for the development of a strategic plan. Alina?
Hey, hi everyone. My name is Alina, and I'm an Environmental Science voting member here in Pacific, but I'm also a University Assembly representative. And in the University Assembly, I sit on a committee called the Campus Policy Committee, and this resolution was born out of a committee about about calling for development of a strategic plan. And so this resolution is basically based on two factors. One, the last strategic plan of the university ended in 2015, and it outlined a lot of diversity initiatives, a lot of recent events, especially, and show you that I don't think a lot of that was actually accomplished. Two, now that we have a president, hopefully he'll be here for an extended period of time, it's a good time to call for a strategic plan process. So that are the two main reasons for us writing the resolution. So you have two copies of the resolution in your packet. The first one is a clean copy, and then the second one involves a lot of red edits that show you how it's different from the university of funding copy. And so the main differences are solve clauses, especially emphasizing the importance of like public input and town hall meetings and all things. So with that, I'm happy to take it.
So let's move on to Q&A. Any questions or clarifications you have, please raise your placard or hand.
I'm deeply sorry if you just said this, but can you define what a strategic plan is?
So I was also looking through this online, and it's essentially what it was called. It's just a plan for like an extended year, like usually in the next 5 years, with like what initiatives the university wants to work on, and outline it in a document. So both involve people in the planning process and also serve as a basis of like we said we want to do this, so we actually work on it. The last strategic plan is online, Google or else you can find it.
Manisha?
An example of a strategic plan would be the GPCI. That's like our strategic plan. So it's sort of a similar thing, but on a like university-wide level. Elena, to be clear, is there a time constraint on pushing this resolution through? Like, does it need to be passed, like, at this meeting, or?
I don't think it needs to be passed at this meeting. Sorry, the committee chair is in the audience. So, I don't think there's necessarily a time constraint. I think if there's no, like, any objections to it, like, you can pass it today, or you can wait for the next meeting as we usually do with resolutions, but it was introduced at the last meeting.
So historically, what kind of graduates and professional student input is there to such a strategic plan?
That I do not know. I don't know. You also do not know, unfortunately.
And
well, strategic plan has been before.
And second, what kind of grad and professional student input is there currently on the campus?
There's me currently, and there's there's open spots for other graduate professional students from GPSA. I'm technically a GPSA member from the university of Columbia. So we would love somebody from GPSA to join. You can talk to me, and I'd introduce you to the chair, actually.
Yeah. To Alex's point, we do comment in the resolve clauses that they share in the strategic planning process. We just don't define that, like what sharing in the strategic planning process means.
Yeah, that's what it was in
the past. Yeah, but I'm saying like if we wanted, like we're calling for that, regardless of whether or not it was in the last one.
So if there's no motion to vote on this resolution today, then we will vote in our next meeting. Okay, thank you. And next we have introduction to resolution 7 on the need for an institutional commitment to the constructing systems of oppression and inequity. And we have Eugene presenting.
Yeah, and there's other members of the OIC Leadership Council that are sponsoring this. Feel free to come and support what I'm going to say. But okay, so to introduce this resolution, I just want to give a brief timeline of some events that have happened over the past couple weeks. I mean, it's out of late. So we all know about the events that happened at the Latino Living Center and the in College Town a few weeks back. We had two resolutions at our last meeting related to that. Around the same time, the OIC Leadership Council, which is made up of 9 organizations that are affinity groups or in other ways working with diverse populations on campus, decided that we also wanted to make known our demands for what we felt was needed to address the problems of bias, inequity, oppression on campus. And so you have in your packet the demands that were sent to the president and associated senior leadership on September 28th. The resolution, many of the whereas clauses then detail the communication that's happened since then. There was an initial press release made by the Leadership Council sort of publicizing that these demands had been made. There was a brief response from the provost a few days later. We sent another press release in response to that message from the provost, which we felt was inadequate in addressing the letter that we had sent. And then you probably all know that last week President Pollack sent a message to the entire campus community about the formation of the task force on campus climate, which we as the GPSA had previously asked, we had given some input on how we thought that should be constructed and such. And I know that from talking to other GPSA members as well as Leadership Council members, we felt like there was not good communication with graduate professional students or opportunities for feedback on the charge, the chairs of the task force, et cetera. So it felt like there was not enough transparency in before we were sort of surprised by the message that we received last week. So, and then the final thing, that this is a new development, and that's why there's some red up here on the screen. We've actually made some changes since I sent this to Manisha on Saturday, because two of our representatives did meet with Provost Polikoff this morning. And as a result of that, we have some additional things we need to, and I also added a couple things that were recommended by GPSA members that either sent me emails or came to the disc meeting this morning. So there are a few things to highlight there. So there was a meeting this morning where Provost Polikoff said that the demands would simply be forwarded to the task force, and that they would be asked to address them. We felt that's inadequate, particularly because several of the demands are outside of the scope of the task force as was defined in the charge that was sent last week. And two of them in fact relate to the formation of that task force. So how could the task force itself address those demands? So so we added some stuff here. Basically, the resolution is asking for the task force to expand its charge to include systemic institutional systems of oppression. And we think that the interpersonal terms and the focus on regulation and policy in the charge are inadequate for addressing these more systemic issues. We're also asking that, can you go back up? Yeah, and so we believe that there needs to be an institutional commitment to deconstructing these issues, particularly because in the message from President Pollack last week, there was a line that I really took some issue with that said we can never eliminate issues of bias and intolerance on campus. We can only do our best to respond to them. I completely disagree with that, and I hope that all of you do as well. I feel like our end goal should unequivocally be to eliminate these issues entirely here on campus and be leaders in eliminating them in our society as a whole. So that's there. We want to support the demands of the OSA Leadership Council. We ask for the president to respond to them in a way that's more significant and detailed than just sending it to this task force. We reiterate that we would like to be able to nominate and our own representatives to the task force instead of having it be done by some folks in the ILR school, as was outlined last week. And then we ask for more transparency and communication in the future, particularly with the task force and working on these issues on an ongoing basis. So that's more or less what's written here. If we want to go into more detail on the red clauses, because those were not provided prior to this meeting, I'd be glad to do so.
So, taking any questions?
What's the timeline you're looking at for this
group? The timeline? I'd love to be fast. Right? Exactly.
Could you scroll up to the changes?
Yes. Which particular change?
Yeah. So this is detailing what I said about the meeting this morning. So the timeline for the task force is to have recommendations and reports by May 1st. We felt that some of the actions that we demanded don't really fall within that timeline, and some of them, as I said, are outside of the scope of the task force.
Any other questions?
I don't know if this is a question as much as a comment, but I think that, and correct me if I'm wrong, this sort of feels like it was a pseudo rejection to Resolution 5, where we actually called on some of the things that you're asking for here. And I don't know if it's in this resolution, but we might want to put the fact in there that that was, like, her response was, thank you for this resolution, I'll take this into account, and then did not actually directly tell us she was technically rejecting Resolution 5. So, just for the group.
Are you proposing language saying that we...
Not now because it's Q&A, but maybe later.
Did you have any
other questions? Just to make sure I understand, they actually, like, there aren't any references that can be on the task force.
So, as of right now, the only people that have been appointed to the task force are the co-chairs. And then it was stated in the message last week that then the Center for Conflict Resolution in the ILR school would make further recommendations, and then the president would appoint individuals on her own.
Any other questions?
So in President Powell's message that said that that this ILR group would be making recommendations, were those recommendations on the composition or on which members would be appointed?
It seemed to be I don't have the language in front of me.
So can I?
Yeah.
So my understanding is that it is a little bit of both, but they're supposed to be talking with campus stakeholders, but that phrase is not defined anywhere. So I have no idea who constitutes a campus stakeholder and who doesn't. So that's another thing we want to take into account, is that there's no guarantee that they'll reach out to the OAC Leadership Council for information on what the task force composition should look like, or us. They might not even reach out to us. We don't know yet.
Kind of related point. I guess my biggest question is, what is this resolution do that Resolution 5 did it? I mean, it's reaffirming our position, but is this gonna help? Are they gonna see this as well? Are you submitting this along the way? I see this has to be forwarded.
Yeah, so this is, it's reiterating that we want the representative task force to be student government. And, but it's also expressing our support for the OIC Leadership Council's demand. Yeah. So that was not in Resolution 5. It's asking for an institutional commitment to deconstructing systems of oppression, which is not in Resolution 5, although there was language asking for that to be part of the charge of the task force, which it was not. It's asking for more transparency in, as a result of the lack of transparency and communication with public representatives.
Yeah, and by supporting the Leadership Council's demands, we can also require that they get a response, or so I should say we send them on email, but we get a response and we don't just get the email from the local person.
Okay.
Yeah,
I think I was just wondering, the task force so far and our recommendations for it are specifically targeted towards systemic oppression in the form of like racial and ethnic minorities and not other minorities. Because there is systemic oppression in other forms that are not really addressed by the task force or
so that goes back to Resolution 5, where we expanded the definition of what we're interested in past racial and ethnic communities to include women, people with disabilities, the LGBTQ community, and we sort of use the language of underrepresented. But we also asked for, specifically because the two events that started this whole thing were targeted at Latinx people and Black people. We asked for two from each of those communities and then two additional representatives from other underrepresented communities. So we are trying to be inclusive of those other underrepresented communities, but we didn't want to define specifically what the composition from that would be.
I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, I read about resolution and saw that in the wording, but this task force will probably never address those concerns. Just because it's in one resolution, it'll be, and there's someone appointed on the task force for anything, those concerns will never come up. Like, there's not enough people with disabilities on the campus for concerns to ever come up with people. I'm trying to say, do people understand what that means? Not that we should change it, but just kind of be aware.
Yeah. Well, thank you for trying to raise that awareness. And I guess my last thought about that is, if the president takes our recommendation that we nominate our own representatives to heart, then If we need those types of people on this task force and we nominate them and the president accepts our nomination and appoints those people, then we can have that representation. And I hope that if we use this mechanism that we suggested here, that we will have a representative group of students serving on this task force.
Sorry, I'm
going to
harp on this. Few times, and I think it's quite relevant. Based on the response and reading through the whereas clauses and the evidence, we've been kind of ignored essentially on pretty much all of our demands as far as I can tell. So I guess how do we get a guarantee that, or like how do we strengthen that and make it quite clear that, you know, we think this is really important, we really want to represent the community properly.
I don't really know if I can answer that question. I mean, we don't have the power to force the president to do anything. We can continue to write resolutions. We can create whatever small amount of political pressure we have on campus. We can, I mean, try to raise our voices and be heard off campus and exert pressure in that way. I don't really know how. We don't have the authority to force anything to happen.
Okay.
Yeah, I want to second what Eugene said. We don't have the authority, but that also doesn't mean that we go gently into that silent night and just stop, like, commenting and stop pushing the question. I mean, I think that this is what the response should be. If the president says, I reject that, our response should be to send another thing being like, well, we're not going to stop saying that this is what we want. I think that that's my personal opinion, not the opinion of, like, the executive committee or people on GPSA. That's my personal opinion. But I think that for us to say we don't accept your rejection is perfectly valid, and it's our right to do so.
I think it's worth remembering in this presentation we just had, and that this organization came about in part from occupations. And so we can send more resolutions, and we also do have next steps available. We haven't used them in decades, but that doesn't mean they're not there.
Nate?
On a similar topic, I think there's a pretty broad range of middle ground that GPSA can officially engage in and can indirectly facilitate or encourage. One thing that we can do is draw on strong relationships with the Cornell Daily Sun that, in particular, Michelle last year and I have this year have been creating and maintaining and make our displeasure. There are also plenty of national journalistic outlets that I'm sure would love to hear this story about how the most robust shared governance system in the nation is being undermined by this brand new president. If we were to grant that, which I'm not recommending we do necessarily. And GBSA is also the duly elected constituent voice of graduate professional students. The assembly system is what there is. If we're not going to be listened to by the administration, we can also encourage all of our constituent groups, the groups that we represent, the groups that we fund, to engage in as aggressive messaging or demonstrations to make our collective display known as the GPSA, there's the graduate and professional student community. The last thing I would say, just because Tyler was talking about it earlier, is money talks, funding is policy, and pushing more money toward organizations that do this work is a way of making our displeasure status more
just a point of order, I think we're still Q&A like discussion.
Any dissent to move into discussion?
This one's a great one.
Okay.
I was thinking whether it's possible to, like, the others to be more active, whether we can just, like, give them some names of recommendations we want to be included in the task force to just show that we have some ideas about this thing we want to be.
So I can say that all of the OIFC organizations have been circulating a nomination form of people that want to be on this task force to their own constituencies. And I guess I can talk to the other OIFC leaders because I don't want to make decisions just on my own, but we could always send out a nomination form to other people to nominate yourself. And that way, if they do end up, we can be like, yes, we have a slate of people ready to go that we all support and we vote.
Yeah, so as far as I know, that nomination form has been circulated to the member organizations of the Leadership Council and also a number of other organizations in the graduate professional schools.
Yes. So it's the Leadership Council is mainly made up of graduate organizations, and we've circulated it to our partner organizations in the professional schools as well.
I have a question on the regarding this in the Be It There Further Resolve clause on 105. It says the GPSA fully endorses any nominations of graduate and professional students to serve on the presidential task force made by OASELC. Does that mean that the GPSA cannot also put forth nominations? You want all the nominations from ELC? Just because we don't know the number, like, what exactly do you envision that looking like?
So, yeah, we don't know the number, and maybe we won't ever know a number. Maybe we just have to say what we want. I don't think this would limit GPSA from making other nominations. I think the second part of this is important as well, that those nominations should more or less be appointed. I feel like we should be autonomous in this and elect, like, selecting our own representation. So
we have Alex.
Silas, and then I'm having the speakers list, and then we'll move on to a formal discussion.
Do we know when people know how many people we need?
So that's just communication. Okay.
Silas?
OIC did actually not authorize the letter. It was the leadership council, right?
Yeah.
And who's actually the OIC?
Yeah. Well, do you mean the actual Office of Inclusion and Student Engagement or the leadership council?
So why does not the OIC not authorize the letter?
Because they're made up of like faculty and staff on campus, and we are graduate and professional students, and so we're representing ourselves. They support us, but we wrote the letter, and we are supporting us.
Okay, and with that, let's move on to formal discussion on the resolution.
Motion to extend the meeting by 5 minutes.
Second. Is that extent? Seeing none, the meeting is extended by 5 minutes. And we are now on discussion for this resolution.
I just want to say I really like pretty much every clause in this resolution. I want to thank folks who are sorry to bring it. I also want to underline points that were made during the kind of discussion during the Q&A session about the fact that this resolution, so something like this happens every year in the UDSA, says some of this is my sixth year in this body. Every year we have some resolution comes to the floor that comes here because of the limits of the structural limits of shared governance, meaning we have no power to make the university ever do anything. We can only recommend things in terms of what our actual power is. And I think it's imperatively important we keep doing that and keep passing resolutions like this. I just want to underline what has already been said today, that what we can do, even though we have no legal power to make them do anything, which we would if we had elected rights otherwise, but what we can do, it's funny, but like it's true, right? What we can do is we can put our bodies in spaces, we can get people to be places, we can put pressure through PR, through whether it's formal communication channels like the Daily Sun or newspapers or whatever, or putting our bodies in the Ministry Hall. We can do those kinds of things that exceed the limited power of our body. And I want us to all keep that in mind because this is the kind of issue that we might have to do those kinds of things on. But again, thank you for bringing this resolution. It is super important and it looks really great to me and I'm really excited.
Any other, we're on formal discussion, so if you would like to make amendments and things like that.
Motion to call a question.
Is there a second?
Second.
Is there a consent? So are you introducing that
I'm
formal
trying to write as quickly as I can. But I can try to do it on the fly if that makes sense.
You can all chip in as well, so.
Huh?
What's your bit is to go, so.
Yeah, I'm happy to do this with chair editing. So I think the clause would go right around line 99, so right after the current whereas. Or sorry, the last whereas. I think it would be
it's a whereas, yeah.
Yeah, so I think, because I could imagine that you'd add, I don't know if I should explain my reading before motion. That might be a good thing to do.
Just go.
So I think, just go for it. Okay. So whereas the update that President Collin provided regarding the formulation, on the formulation of and charge of the presidential task force implicitly rejected
the contents of Resolution 5 without communication with the GPSA, or without direct communication with the GPSA? I will confirm the amendments to that.
Well, would you like to elaborate on that? Is it all the contents?
The
spirit, the road is my spirit of that.
Yeah, sure. They can reread it.
Yes, thank you.
Without any direct communication.
With the GPSA.
The other thing that I'll say but not add, if that's all right to do at the moment, is that I think it could be possible to pair this with the immediate result and explicitly ask President Pollock to say that she's saying no, and she's going to say no.
Can I make a comment on that? So I think last year she may have gotten the vibe from student assembly that they would rather hear responses sooner than like take time to like think about it, which is why I think we got this really quick response of like, thanks, we'll take it into account. But that doesn't like require a second response. So like I think that there's like other things going on there. Not that I'm like super thrilled with that response, but I think that that might be part of why like we only got this like really quick one off is because she was sort of giving this message that that's what she should be doing.
Okay. So Zenda, is that the final amendment?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay. So now we are in discussion of this amendment. Is that correct?
Just
go. Okay. Those opposed? Abstention? Okay. So, with a vote of 12-0-6, the amendment passes. Thank you, Zenda. And then now we are back to discussion on the whole resolution.
I'm sorry, I was just looking on the language again. So, on the third, the
third
result
clause.
Oh my gosh, sorry.
So the GPSA publicly supports the Manfred OISE. They had a response, published response. I was just wondering if it was clear that we also supported their response to the official with that. Like, so they made a bunch of initial demands and they had a response to that. Are we supporting their official demands and like future demands? It's something new with the language.
Yeah, so what this says is that it supports the demands that were made in the September 28th letter, which is the demand. The press releases don't call
them. They are
not. They're not demanding.
Okay. Next.
Um,
So I think the OASA Leadership Council has done a great job taking a lead on this issue, and I think that it is, you know, supportive of them for us to back their efforts because they've done a lot of the work on this issue, and they are a bunch of people who think deeply and are probably better equipped to handle this kind of an issue than GPSA as a whole. But I wonder if, and I'm not making them right now because I have to leave, I wonder if we want to do something with the whereas clause that currently begins at line 100, indicating that the GPSA is the official voice of the graduate professional student community, and, you know, something to the effect that blowing us off is basically blowing off the entire graduate professional student community, separate from the fact that blowing off OISC leadership is blowing off the underrepresented and marginalized graduate professional student community.
Joan?
So I do want to caution on that quick sentiment, because that is throwing down the proverbial gauntlet with President Pollack to say, do you believe in shared governance? Which is a massive question for her to undertake that other assemblies are grasping as well. And I think to do that to the whole shared governance, it's an idea that I think is being toyed with in many ways, but I want to caution. I want to put some caution from the undergraduate perspective in there, because we had this discussion. It's not the same discussion that you all have. But I do want to kind of put that in there, that there have been conversations about, like, you say, if you believe in shared governance or not, essentially in a resolution, and I think you need a long debate on that longer question.
Just to respond to that, I totally agree that caution is important and that we should be discreet and not hurl down the gauntlet accidentally or prematurely. But I think that that can be managed with tone and diction, that we can say essentially, you know, we already say implicitly rejected the spirit of our resolution, and I think we might consider adding something to say that by not coming to OISC or GPSA for graduate and professional student nominations to task force, that the Office of the President is neglecting to avail itself of the, you know, obvious and natural routes for creating nominees.
That we're not proposing a formal one.
No, I haven't.
Any other comments? Comments? Questions? Amendments?
We need to call a question if there's no other comments.
Second.
Actually, before we continue, I just want to propose an amendment.
Don't you? I will not draw on my
head. Okay, I apologize. It's just in light of our previous whereas that we just added with the resolution class. I thought it was appropriate to, correct me if I'm wrong, I thought it was appropriate to add an amendment that says, you know, be a further resolve that we reaffirm the demands made in the resolution class. I haven't gotten that point.
Okay, so I will entertain a formal amendment.
I just wanted to comment quickly that the first year thought was kind of reaffirmed our position about the task force and then the other resolved clauses get at the democratic composition of it. So it sounds to be like that therefore the resolved clause is already kind of addressed what resolution class is.
Okay, so no. Okay. All right.
Motion to approve the reading of the minutes.
Second. Okay. Any dissent? So the meeting has been extended to 5 minutes. Motion.
Jesse, to push back on your point though, didn't we also call explicitly for like certain number of students represented from representative communities in Resolution 5? And that's not in here. So, and it's not, to my knowledge, in the demands. So we might want to reaffirm Resolution 5.
So in what's line 100, in this one, it's probably further down now.
I have the original one.
Yeah, so where we're saying the GPSA reiterates its position that graduate professional students appointed at the presidential task force be representative of the marginalized groups, we could just sort of add. As indicated in Resolution 5.
Yeah. At the end, as indicated.
I would take that as a friendly amendment, but I don't think we're allowed to do that in the amendment.
You never passed the ending rule, so who knows?
We don't pass the ending rule. All right.
Okay.
All
right.
So we are in discussion on this.
Second.
Any dissent? Those in favor of this amendment? Those opposed? Abstention? So, with a vote of 13-0-2-5, the amendment passes. Thank you. And Senna. Now we are back to discussing the whole resolution.
Motion to call a question.
Second.
Any dissent to call in a question? Seeing none, those in favor of passing the resolution as is, please raise your hand. Opposed? Abstention? With a vote of 13-0-5, the resolution passes. Thank you, Eugene.
I'd like to make a motion to table old business discussion resolution 3 next meeting.
And in dissent, old business resolution 3 is tabled. I would entertain a motion. Any dissent to adjourning at this time? Seeing none, we are adjourned.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.